I didn't realize he was collecting us until I became part of the collection. At first, it felt flattering, intentional, like I'd been noticed in a building where most people were interchangeable. He didn't come on strong. He didn't rush. He learned how I worked, how I spoke in meetings, where I hesitated. He remembered details other people forgot. He framed attention as mentorship, interest as investment. By the time I understood the pattern, it already included names I recognized. Women who had arrived confident and left quiet. Women who once been loud in meetings and now chose their seats carefully. Women who disappeared after restructuring or suddenly decided to pursue opportunities elsewhere. He never forced anything. That was the trick. Everything looked consensual on paper. Texts sent willingly. Dinners agreed to. Doors closed without resistance. But power has weight. And once you're under it, choice doesn't feel like choice anymore. It feels like gravity. When one of us tried to leave, really leave, he didn't shout, he didn't threaten. He simply reminded her who he was inside the system. And the system listened. I had already worked in enough offices to recognize certain men, the ones who mistook access for intimacy, the ones who thought leadership came with entitlement. But he didn't fit the obvious profile. He was polished, careful, the kind of manager HR trusted because he spoke their language fluently. Metrics, performance, alignment, culture. We worked in a mid-sized consulting firm in northern Italy. The kind that loved to describe itself as modern while still operating on old hierarchies. He ran one of the most profitable departments. People wanted to be on his team because visibility followed him. Promotions followed him. Protection followed him. I joined as a senior analyst, experienced enough not to be naive, but knew enough to still believe skill would speak for itself. From the beginning, he positioned himself as an ally. He asked about my career goals. He framed questions as curiosity, not evaluation. He made room for my ideas in meetings, repeating them slowly so others would hear. That's how it started. Public reinforcement. Private encouragement. Nothing inappropriate. Nothing reportable. Just enough attention to make me feel seen. I noticed the women on his team before I noticed the pattern. They were all capable, educated, sharp. But there was a sameness in how they moved around him. A slight pause before speaking. A careful calibration of tone. Like they were always adjusting an invisible dial. One of them, Sophia, had been there longer than anyone else. She knew the systems inside out. Clients trusted her. Yet, she never challenged him openly. When he spoke, she nodded. When he redirected her work, she accepted it without debate. Another, Elena, had joined around the same time I did. Younger, ambitious, visibly eager. She laughed at his jokes a beat too late, like she was checking if laughter was the right response. I remember thinking she was nervous. It took months before I realized they weren't nervous. They were managing him. The first boundary crossed quietly. A late meeting that didn't need to be late. A drink suggested to decompress. He framed it as professional bonding. I agreed because refusing would have felt like signaling disinterest in my own growth. He didn't touch me that night. He listened. He shared personal details strategically. Enough vulnerability to invite reciprocity. Not enough to expose himself. When I left, he hugged me briefly, firmly, like a punctuation mark. The second boundary crossed with familiarity. Texts after hours. Comments about how we worked well together because we understood each other. Compliments layered between feedback so they felt earned. By the time he asked, the other brand was right and light. It felt inevitable and strange and more important to me. I told myself I was choosing, that I was experienced, that I knew the risks, that consenting meant control. What I didn't account for was how quickly the environment would rearrange itself around that decision. Once I said yes, the tone shifted subtly. He didn't become possessive. he became efficient. Time together folded seamlessly into work. Lunch meetings blurred into dates. Performance conversations included personal references that reminded me how closely he watched me. He never promised anything. He didn't need to. Access was the currency. I became aware of the others through absence more than presence. Sophia stopped looping me into certain client threads. Elena started avoiding shared lunches. When we were all together, there was a quiet choreography. Who sat where? Who spoke when? Who deferred? One evening, after too much wine, Elena told me she was thinking of transferring departments. She framed it as restlessness, curiosity, growth. But her voice flattened when she mentioned his name. She didn't accuse him. She didn't need to. The story lived in the pauses, in how she described feeling watched, evaluated, selected. That word stuck with me. Selected. I began to see the structure. He didn't pursue women randomly. He targeted subordinates with upward trajectories, women whose success he could influence, women who would hesitate to disrupt the system that benefited them. Consent existed. Of course it did. No one was dragged. No one was threatened up front. But power shaped the available choices, narrowing them, until agreement felt like the only professional option. When Elena finally asked to leave his team, the response was polite, supportive. He even praised her initiative publicly. Behind the scenes, her evaluations changed. Small notes appeared, concerns about collaboration, about reliability, nothing dramatic, just enough to follow her. She left the company 6 months later. I stayed longer than I should have. Partly because I believed I was different. Partly because leaving would have required naming something I wasn't ready to name. Partly because I was complicit. I benefited from his favor. Even as I resented it, the breaking point wasn't traumatic. It was administrative. I applied for a role outside his department, a lateral move that would have reduced our entanglement. He didn't argue. He smiled. He said he understood. 2 weeks later, the role was restructured. My workload increased. My autonomy decreased. Meetings I once led were reassigned. Feedback arrived without warmth. The attention that had once felt like investment became scrutiny. I understood the message clearly. Leaving him didn't mean leaving cleanly. It meant leaving marked. I eventually left the firm, not because I was pushed out, but because staying required a kind of quiet submission I could no longer maintain. My exit interview was cordial. My file was immaculate. On paper, nothing had gone wrong. That's the part that lingers. The absence of a smoking gun. The way systems protect behaviors that don't violate rules explicitly. Only ethos implicitly. I've seen him since, through LinkedIn updates and industry whispers. He's advanced, expanded his team, built a reputation as a talent magnet. Sometimes I wonder how many women are orbiting him now, mistaking proximity for safety, attention for opportunity. I wonder how many will leave quietly, carrying the weight alone, because nothing technically happened. What stayed with me wasn't the relationship itself. It was the realization that power doesn't need coercion to corrupt consent. It only needs structure. Incentives. Silence. I didn't lose my career, but I lost a layer of certainty. The belief that professionalism alone could shield me. The comfort of thinking experience made me immune. Now, when I enter new workplaces, I watch differently. I notice who gets collected, who gets protected, who disappears. And I remember how easy it is to say yes when the cost of saying no is designed to be invisible until it's too late.